Jordi, welcome to the podcast.
Hello there. Nice to see you.
Thank you very much. So to kick things off straight away, I heard you on Daniel Prince's podcast recently as part of my research for this conversation. And something that caught my attention was this idea that your text or your word on Twitter trends to zero. So I'd love to spend some time talking about why that's a problem in your mind, and then we'll let that flow into, you know, what you're working on and how you came to today.
Yeah, and I started saying this after meeting a Bitcoiner friend. So, you know, I travel a lot. My job is to go to different Bitcoin circular economies, or even if they are not Bitcoin economies, maybe they're freedom seekers, and maybe they might be interested in these freedom technologies like Bitcoin. And I met this friend, Gio, and we run a workshop together in front of a group of nomads, digital nomads. The digital nomad crew is like, it's like a big group of people. They are, depending on the numbers, depending who you ask, there are like between 30 to 50 million nomads in the world, wow. Which is big, you know.
For us, it's like a whole country. Yeah, easy. Wow.
So they are looking for freedom, but they don't really understand the meaning of freedom. So they're starting to look like for geographical freedom. But then once they travel, they realize that maybe they get their social accounts blocked or their bank accounts blocked. Because, you know, they are accessing to those services from different IPs, from different countries. Maybe they use different services. So this is like why this group, it is very interesting to me when I travel to places. And talking to him, we came up to the conclusion that posting stuff on Twitter or in whichever platform, it's useless because posting something costs zero. So the value of what we are saying online doesn't have any value because it doesn't cost anything to post. So that was the premise on why posting on Twitter means nothing. That's the origin.
Interesting. And I think that to play devil's advocate to that, the response would be, Twitter is a place that I get information that helps me make decisions. I can improve my life in some way. Maybe you're there to make investment decisions, or maybe you're there to learn from a health practitioner of some form. And therefore, the information they're posting might cost them nothing in a sense, but it's valuable to someone else. But I guess what is the cost is the point here. So Jordi, to flip that around, what to you would mean that posting something online actually requires cost, and why would that be useful?
Yes. So today there is like this theory, the dead internet theory, that says that 80% of what happens on the internet are bots. And wow. that theory came to fruition like a couple of years ago before the AI frenzy. So now, probably, if you ask the writers of this theory, they will say that it's not 80, maybe it's 90.
Even more, wow.
99%. So what I'm trying to say is that, yes, you post on Twitter, I follow you, and I follow a couple of people, but because you have created a web of trust, meaning that you know Princey knows me, and then because of all of that, we start to give value to a couple of accounts. But there are, every time I post something on Twitter, I get like this retweet or repost or answer or whatever from a bot. And bots are learning. And what I mean bots are learning is like people that run the bots, or people that run the bots that will run the bots in the future, are learning to create more realistic accounts. So there will be a time, there will be a moment that we will not be able to differentiate from who's real and who's not. So that's what I say, that if when you post on the internet, you don't know, and I don't have the answer. You ask me like, what would it mean, would make it valuable? I don't know. So what I'm trying to advocate is for using a different type of network. I don't know what is the solution in the current network. So I can't help you with that.
Well, and maybe that's not such a problem, in that helping understand that there is a problem is the first step to ever creating some kind of solution. So in the future, the scenario you're painting is you would have a Twitter profile and you could post content if you chose to, but something like 95% of social media users never post anything or like anything or comment on anything. They're just there consuming other people's content. It's not going to be obvious if you're consuming a robot's information or if you're consuming a real person.
And sometimes,
and what are the ramifications? I mean, the ethical ramifications of that are very obvious in terms of, like, there's no accountability to their words. Like, who owns that robot and how many robots have they got out there saying the same shit?
And sometimes it doesn't matter because we, the consumers, are happy with the content that we are reading.
Yes.
And that's the issue, that sometimes, and this has happened before, you know, Cambridge Analytica scandal happened a
yes,
couple of years
massive.
Ago. Yes. That was just one of example that came to life, but there are many other scandals, or maybe you don't even want to call it scandal. It's just the way the internet works today is that we are reading information that is switching our understanding of the world. So the ones that are publishing it give us the narrative or sell us the narrative. But then it's like Inception, the movie, you know, it's like we don't really think that it was an idea that was planted in our brain, but it was.
Mm. Oh my God, it's kind of scary, isn't it? And to recap briefly my understanding of the Cambridge Analytica, and you call it scandal because it's a good word, that it's not, it's just people doing business. And it's not the first time that military grade technology has ended up in the retail market. That actually happens all the time, where, you know, a lot of money is spent in the military space to develop new tools, and they end up being actually repurposed and very useful in the wider economy. But my understanding of that was the ability for the US in particular were developing tools to influence social media, like the accounts of young Afghanistanis and Iraqis were being peppered with specific types of social media posts to try and sway their thinking. And they developed a very, very, very effective way of doing that. And then Cambridge Analytica essentially privatized that process and took it to politics and drove the outcome that was Brexit, and also ended up as part of the Trump election as well. And you're right, it's called a scandal by the people that didn't like the outcome. But for the people that chose to do it, it was a piece of business.
It's a point of
you're able to use the tools that exist. Is it ethical? Well, that's another discussion entirely. Fascinating, isn't it? And this is why, Geordie, I'm fully of the opinion that when you take into context this kind of fourth turning discussion that I really enjoy, it's like, where are we currently in the cycle? And you look at the debt collapse potential, and you look at the central bank position, and you look at what's going on technologically. You're like, wow, this is all hotting up at the same time. I'm firmly of the opinion we're in an information war, like, already. And actually, that Cambridge Analytica story is a really good example of how information's already being used in a way to drive outcomes that you might have never thought about.
Yeah. And talking about ethics, what is ethical? Your ethics is different than mine. You know, there is not a book, a set of rules that says what is and what is not. We might agree on the basic principles, but there will always be someone that has a different point of view. So it's a complicated topic.
And I think I strongly believe in that. But what's interesting is that people don't spend, basically, it's actually only happened to me recently when I've started investing in myself more and doing personal development work. That's like, Jake, what are your values? And what are your ethics that you live your day-to-day life by? And they're kind of very core principles by which you make decisions, particularly in my case with wife and children. It's like, well, what are our ethics as a couple? And what do we, you know, really, like, where do we stand with all this kind of stuff? We should have been, you know, not forced, but it would have been very helpful as a 15-year-old to sit down and think about what my ethics and values are. But I would always encourage people to have their own, absolutely. So there is no one rule, is there? Gosh. Oh, my God, Geordie, it's classic, isn't it? We've been recording for 9 minutes and we could go in like 1,000 directions in terms of topics that we obviously are passionate about. So this idea then of cost in relation to the transmit of information online is a very interesting one for anyone that's involved in Bitcoin. You've obviously got the background as to the, where proof of work came from and all of Adam Back's work and all this kind of stuff.
Yes.
So as of today, there'll be people out there that won't know who you are that listen to this podcast. Maybe we could spend a little bit of time chatting that through. And just to tee it up, we were introduced by Alex Svetsky, who's been on a previous podcast of mine and will be joining next week. And you guys are working together to build a business called Setlantis. So talk me through how you got involved with that and why it's something you want to spend your time doing.
And I was going to bring up as well Alex's name, because he has recently published this book called The Bushido of Bitcoin, where he talks about these principles that we were talking about, like the ethics that we should have as Bitcoiners. So he has like studied the Japanese ancient warriors and like made the connection on what are the things that the next civilization that he believes it's the Bitcoiner civilization should have. So this is just a short parenthesis to say that I'm working with Alex. We have been building Setlantis for over a year now. It was announced, the first idea, he mentioned his first idea on BTC Prague last year. And now in a couple of weeks, we will be back in BTC Prague and we will be able to showcase all of our advances, the new features, and of course, the whole product to the crowd. So if anybody is going to BTC Prague, come say hi. I will be there. Alex will be there. And the rest of the team will be there. Like, Alex and I are the ones that are going, that it's our public face, but the team is bigger and they are all locked in the basement developing 24/7, but they are part of the team as well. And we couldn't be here without them. So what we are building is called Setlantis. It's like a social network because we believe that legacy social networks are different. I don't like to call them social networks anymore because they are not. They are social media platforms. They are companies that are mass media producers. As you said, most of us are consumers, even though anyone can produce in those social media platforms. But then they are run by their own algorithms. And if you produce content that is not aligned with their agenda, it will not be shown because it's...
Yes. Freedom of speech is not freedom of reach.
I like that. And talking back to the cost of producing and all that, like any employee on Twitter with a little bit of high rank of authority can enter my Twitter account and change whatever I posted. So that's why if you're following me on Twitter, why should you trust me? Because maybe you're reading something I didn't read, because they are private companies. And even though they can tell you that they store your passwords, encrypted with whichever unbreakable encryption system. I build startups. I've been building startups for 10 years and I know how you can store safely a password that I will never be able to see. But I know how using a hash of it, I can enter to any account because I've done that before. And I've read messages from my users. And my motive was to learn from those messages to build a better tool. And that's ultimately the goal I think that these platforms are using, but it is like this until I change my mind. So what we are building is we're building a social network that goes back to the origin. It's not, we are not competing to send you or to bombard you with a lot of ads or with fake news or with any other ideas or political ideas that we might have, because we are building Setlantis on top of this protocol called Nostr that we Bitcoiners like a lot because it's open source. And if you don't like what I'm doing on Setlantis, you as a user can pack your bags. And when I mean pack your bags, it means pack all your follower list, pack all your following list, pack all your likes, pack all your comments, and bring them to another social network that uses the same underlying protocol. You cannot do that with Instagram. You cannot bring all your follower list from Instagram to Twitter. That's not how it's built. It's built so they create like these defensive modes so they can be as big as possible. So once they have created these network effects, you feel like, all right, you know what? I'm going to stay here. Even though I don't like the new rules of the house, because maybe now Instagram doesn't let you post these things, or maybe when you post things, they shadow ban you. because of all the effort that you've put on building your credibility on one network, you'll stay there forever. And this is the difference that we've been, the underlying principles that we have added to Satlantis. So I didn't explain it yet what is Satlantis, but I wanted to set up the groundwork of how are we building it and why do we think that the other platforms have different use cases. We believe that.
I love it, Jordi. It's great. And just to tee up this next phase, I recently had on the podcast Daniel, aka B2C Gandalf, and also Seth for Privacy. Shout out to both those guys. Really interesting what they're working on. But both are like, yeah, Nostr's interesting, but I decided to stick with Twitter. And both of them have pre-existing audiences on Twitter. And it's to your point, you're incentivized to stick around because you've put so much time and effort into that network. And so yeah. Nostr is changing that for sure. And when I put it to those guys, like, you know, the platform risk that you're carrying every single day, if you say something that you're not supposed to say, then they won't hesitate to get rid of you from their platform. And you start self-censoring. And there's a number of other kind of secondary impacts to that. Carry on, like, fleshing out. So what are the problems with these status quo social media platforms that that you may have experienced yourself, or equally, like, people that are adopting Nostr or adopting Satlantis have told you about?
So I have a couple of examples of these nomad friends. I mingle a lot with nomads. So I have this friend. She had an Instagram account where she posted pictures and videos of silly cats, just cats, you know? Nothing wrong. So it was not like a vlog content or whatever. No. The name was Cat Whatever. So it was not tied to her identity, at least publicly, because you know that yes. when you start,
you have to give them something. Yeah,
you have to give them everything. Like, and maybe one day they will ask for, I don't know, the size of your underwear. So in this case, it was just cats. And one day, the account didn't stop working. So she asked me, hey, can you help me recover this? So we looked into the terms and conditions that nobody really understands, even if you read them, because it's legal jargon. It's made for you to not understand. So if anybody's listening, don't be afraid. This is the way it's built. It's built in a way that we cannot understand. So we were trying to find out, like, all these contact support buttons or reach out. Or nobody cared because it was just a stupid cat's account with a couple of hundred followers. For the reason, and we will never know the reason, because that account was so small that nobody can put all the energy or effort to reach out to us because we're nobody. So for whichever reason, Instagram decided to cancel this account. All those pictures were lost forever, at least, I mean, to my friend. Those pictures are never lost. They are on stores securely with a couple of redundancy copies on the servers of Instagram. That's for sure. It's just that the person that was running that account lost access to it. So this is an example on when you post something, when you, and that's like a silly example. It was just cats. It was just a friend doing silly things on the internet. But imagine you are like a small entrepreneur, or you have a shop, or you are an influencer, and this is your life. So what we should understand is that when we post things on, you know, like we Bitcoiners, we say, your money in your bank, it's not your money, it's not in your bank, it's not your money, right? So in social media platforms, it's the same. It's not your pictures, it's not yours, and maybe it's not even pictures, it's just bits and bytes, you know? So when we open an account in those platforms, we have to understand that we are not opening nothing. We are creating an account in a centralized platform that allows us temporarily, until the owner of that house, call it whichever social network you want, the social media platform you want, decides to block our access. So everything that we post, or our selfies, or our pictures on the beach, or on landmarks, or whatever, they are never ours. They are from the company, and they allow us to manage them so we can generate content and drive engagement on that social media platform, so then more people will stay there. Because these platforms, when they started, Facebook was like there were others, but Facebook was the biggest one that started as a social network. They started in a way to connect with my friends, my school friends, and my family members, and maybe friends that I met on travels. But now these platforms have had to evolve because we have like this attention economy, and they are competing with Netflix, for example. So we users are being bombarded with all this type of information. And what they do is like, they try to keep up because they know that if I'm not browsing, if I'm not scrolling infinitely on TikTok, they know that my attention will go to Netflix. So they have to build like these type of tools to keep me hooked. And I'm saying this is right or this is wrong. I'm saying this is how the attention economy works. So if you understand that you're playing this game, it's fine. The problem is when you're playing the game without knowing you're in the game. So that's why we decided to not only create this platform that is called Satlantis that will help you get out of the game, but also advocating for there are other ways, there are other options. And we Bitcoiners, I think, Bitcoiners, Nomad, Frequent Travelers, Freedom Seekers, Geo-Arbitragers, Flag Theorists, all these people are starting to think of something deeper than just money. We start thinking about our freedom. And freedom, maybe we Bitcoiners discover it as freedom of money, but there are other topics that will make us free, like maybe owning what we say, which might be called freedom of speech.
Yeah, owning what we say, it's a fascinating concept, isn't it? I mean, just so much of that resonates. I'd add to your list of people that are interested in Nostr is just content creators, full stop. So I've personally been kind of playing around for a few years now. Podcasting's become my favorite, but I did a lot of tweeting for a period of time on an old account that I decided to start afresh when I launched this podcast this year. Just because why not? Like, could I build it again? Was kind of my theory. But the platform risk is very real, right? Maybe I'd use another analogy, which I like, which is the idea of like capital allocation. And the opposite of that, or done poorly, is misallocation. And you could argue very strongly that pouring a lot of time, energy, and effort into building a YouTube channel is a huge misallocation of capital, especially if you're going to be discussing subjects that are unlikely to be interesting to the customers of YouTube, i.e. the big advertising contracts, because they'll just rug pull you the second that you're talking about something they don't like. And Nostr changes that. And so it's like, what are you willing to give away by sticking with the status quo? And what can you gain by jumping on something new that has huge potential? And I guess that's a question I'd put to you, Jordi. It's like, how did you reach this point of like, okay, well, I know there's a ton of problems with the old system. And here's this new idea. Like, maybe you met Alex in person or you heard about Satlantis. Like, how did you suddenly go, this is the thing I want to work on?
Yeah. And I like the term misallocation. It's so strong. It's true. It's like you're putting, but you don't know. When you start, you don't know because you've heard what you've heard. And if everybody's talking about YouTube, you're going to start an account on YouTube and you're going to be there and you're going to work your ass off to be the next YouTuber and putting 10 hours a day, 12 hours a day, 15 hours a day if deemed necessary. And then after you've put all this work and then you're somebody, I'm not saying you're big, you're just somebody there and you see all these passive effort, passive income that you can get from previous videos. It will drive you the interest to keep doing that. So I like that you mentioned podcasting because Nostr is this tool that can have many different use cases. And one of them is podcasting, as your own show is on Nostr. So anybody, if I like this podcast that I'm listening from you, then I can just send a value for value and send you a couple of sats to demonstrate my interest in you. To answer your question, the mindset change should come from our users. And the problem is that these big corporations have now they are in the spotlight and they are popular because at the beginning, nobody used these platforms. They had to start from the beginning. But I think that those are cycles. As I said, I work in the startup industry for a while. And then I I switched to innovation. In innovation, what you do is you study the incumbents and see where are the cracks that could lead them to failures. So then you either start something new or partner with them to avoid them crumbling down. This is Facebook is very smart in doing that. For example, Facebook, when they started, they became the big social network. But then it became a social network for boomers. So what did they do? Instead of creating other social networks, which they tried, but they failed, they decided to buy Instagram. Why? Because Instagram was where the cool kids were now. But then they realized that they were missing on the communications. So because nobody was using Facebook Messenger, or at least not in every country. So they decided, well, why don't we just buy WhatsApp? So Facebook is a good example of innovation. Instead of, because let me give you a couple of bad examples of innovation. Kodak. Kodak was the go-to brand for cameras. Then there was this thing called digital cameras that somebody invented, and it's like nobody's using Kodak anymore. So Kodak was in a steep decline. The same with video, Blockbuster, one of the biggest companies. They were just renting videos. And then comes Netflix, and he's like, oh, wow, we can just send DVDs. And after the internet, why don't we leverage those DVDs through the landlines and then Wi-Fi and all that? And then everybody has Netflix on his house. And Blockbuster had to shut down operations after being the dominant player. Why am I telling you all these examples? That, and this is my personal opinion. I know nobody in Twitter. But I believe that these big incumbents like Twitter, they will one day adopt Nostr as their underlying technology. Nobody will know. The users won't even know. They will just see like new features like, okay, I can send subs. But no, nobody will understand. Nobody needs to know. No, I don't know how Netflix works. I hit play and it works. So I believe that either those big corporations, so social media corporations, do it. And I believe Twitter should be, or Twitter is my horse, winning horse selection, mm-hmm. because they are close to Jack Dorsey and Elon Musk, and they understand about this. I don't know them, right? So this is my opinion. But either they do that, or there will be another social network player, call it Atlantis, call it Primal, call it Fountain. I don't know. But there will be one of those players that has the chance to defeat Goliath. Mm. You know, so this is what I see. This is part of the innovation cycle in any new technology. It happened with Airbnb. Now, like everybody uses Airbnb as a verb instead of going to the hotel.
Yeah.
So this is.
I stayed in an Airbnb. Yeah.
Right.
Even if you booked it via booking.com, it was still an Airbnb. Yeah.
So that's my point. It will happen. We don't know how it will happen. We don't know if it will be like the small company, a small startup that will change the status quo, or the old incumbent smart enough to accept that they are in a decline and that they have to accept this new technology. But it's early. So I know that now the supremacy is not at risk. But it
is early, absolutely.
It's so early.
This is what gets my juices going, though, is that, and this is just me personally, NOS is still incredibly early. And if you want to go out there and create a, you know, let's say a podcast, I'll use my podcast as an example. I should probably, if the goal is sell sponsorship contracts, be hammering Twitter all day long. And within 12 months, I would probably be able to sign a couple of sponsorship contracts with a Bitcoin exchange, maybe, or some kind of hardware wallet business, or a custody company, maybe like an Unchained or an OnRamp or someone. They'll be like, yeah, we want to sponsor you 100 grand a year. Boom, boom, boom. You're making your 300 grand a year because you're able to churn out 250,000 views a month. And I'm not doing that specifically because I've got lots of things driving me that aren't about monetizing immediately around sponsorship contracts. And equally, I have built myself a financial position where I don't have to monetize straight away. And largely that's thanks to Bitcoin. right? And this is like a whole generation of people now building stuff that are doing it with Bitcoin in the back pocket. So if this thing you're trying to build fails, then you still have a way to feed your family, keep the lights on, and it basically opens up this whole wide space to try crazy shit, which I think is unbelievably cool. And so what would it look like if you don't have to monetize a podcast for 2 years, for 3 years, for 4 years? It incentivizes you differently. And inevitably, it's like, what's stopping you from making Noster the absolute fulcrum of this whole like media project that you're creating? And I might well do that. What would be fun to just run through now, Jordy, is so what are some of the building blocks of Noster that excite you, that are different to if you just would like, let's go all in on Twitter?
Right. So I like to say that we are early, right? Like Noster was invented or discovered, this is another debate, 4 years ago. But Bitcoin is 16 years old. So it's the same. So the first one, the first people, the first group of people that starts playing with Noster will have the same risk as they had when they were playing with Bitcoin. But also the risk is associated with the reward. So if you're early and you start putting all this energy, all this effort that you say, I have like a couple of years that I can keep building, this might be like you are creating like this awesome network of followers that once Noster kicks off and takes off like a rocket, then you will capitalize on that. So every new technology, when you are early, you can say it can go completely wrong because you were too early, maybe, and you were like playing with this new technology that then nobody wanted to use. But then if it goes well, it capitalizes so quickly. So what I'm trying to say is that we're talking about Noster today because Atlantis is running under this protocol, but any content creator, podcast creator like you or like everybody that's listening, study other technologies. This is the one that I believe for creators is the good one, but don't just follow what I'm saying. There are many other technologies. So now that I said that, what are the features that I think that's why Noster is like the winning horse? Again, my point of view, right? So I said that owning what you say online before, this is something that really excites me. Because when you post something on Twitter, yes, it's your account and you can pay your account and you can verify or whatever. But you can never be 100% certain that what you posted, it was you who posted it. Because any employee can come and change it, delete it, edit it, or even worse, create a deepfake. And now, my brother, he's a cameraman for the local TV station, and he likes to play with technology, right, with camera. The other day, he sent me an audio of me saying bad things about my boss and about my personal relations. It seemed like my voice.
Wow.
Imagine like we are now, somebody is like doing a deep fake of what I'm saying, and I'm saying, oh no, I don't like Jake and this podcast, it's not good. This can be done today with, it's so easy. In one afternoon, we can change the whole topic of what am I saying. So what I would like to say here that really excites me about in Noster is that anytime I post something under my account, in quotes, because it's not an account, it's an identity, it's a digital identity. But so people understand, every time I post something on my account, needs to be signed digitally by my private key. So if somebody decides to download my video, edit it just slightly, just change one pixel or just one bit. Even if you go even to the smaller unit of account of digital files, even if you change just one bit, then when they re-uploaded it, anybody will see that this has been signed with a different signature, not with mine. So that means that with Noster, you can reduce the number of deep fakes and fake news over there. Only if you know who you're following. If you start listening to this video that now has been reposted by another random account that is run by bots, of course that doesn't avoid that. What it avoids is that like personal accounts, private accounts cannot be edited by bad actors. And And people might think, no, I'm nobody. Who's gonna edit my account? Or, well, there are groups of hackers that their job is to target different types of users in social networks. So if they are looking to hack Justin Bieber's account, it will be very obvious and nobody can relate to Justin Bieber. But there are other hackers that what they're trying to do, and there is a black market for that on the dark web, that they buy Twitter. I'm using Twitter and extrapolated to any social media accounts, to Twitter accounts with a specific number of followers, with 500, with 1,000, with 10,000. And then there is like this black market. So then with these masses, they can change the narrative of what's going on. So in Nostr, unless you lose your keys, so Nostr is, it uses the same ideas of the same underlying principles as Bitcoin. You have your private key, you have your public key. Unless you lose your private key, what you say can be demonstrated that you said it. And if you lose it, or if you are not certain that if you lose it, if you lost it, if you are just worried that you might have lost it, you can create a new account with a new pair of keys, and you can say disregard anything else that's posted from my other account because I think it has been compromised. So there is like, and you can, I know that you can do that as well with Twitter, but again, the new account will be created under this closed source ecosystem, which is the Twitter database, which we don't know what's going on there because it's a closed source. So that's my favorite principle or my favorite characteristic of Nostr.
Mm. So it's in some ways, Nostr represents a more sophisticated form of communication online from a perspective of truth. So when you can see that a post has been made from an account that you know is run by someone that you have a relationship with in some way already, then you can have a higher chance of trusting that information. And the second that it's not posted by that account, then you know that you can disregard it.
Yes.
And I think something that this is why it's important to play around with new things. And just to highlight a couple of experiences I've had that are interesting. First of all, is there's a proof of work involved with actually curating your Nostr feed. So you've got to go out and you've got to go and find accounts and you've got to start interacting with people, see what they're posting about, see who they're following, and physically go and actually find this information. And so a lot of people are like, oh, I want suggestions from Instagram, please. It's like, no, this is your social experience online and you get to curate that as much as you want or as little as you want. And so the onus is on you, the user. Now, the cool part is that you're no longer the product. So your attention is not being monetized when you spend time on Nostr. And that experience is radically different. My idea is like Nostr is where I hang out, and that's the long-term play. But equally, I'm posting content on every channel I can because it makes sense to leverage the content that I've already created. So I post on Instagram, post on Twitter, post on Rumble, post on YouTube. It's going out on iTunes via RSS feeds, Spotify, etc., Fountain. So all of it's going out. But every time I log into Instagram, I end up buying something. Every single time. You know, it's someone selling a course about how to set up the lighting for your podcast. Someone selling a course about how to get more views. And you're like, I didn't fucking want to buy anything. I literally came on here to see if anyone had responded to something. And the final point to make, Jordy, is in order to post my podcast content on Nostr, I have to have a Nostr.build account or any other tool that's like Nostr.build because I have to host the data somewhere to then post it on the network. And I pay for that service. And it really hammers home how when you log into Twitter or you log into Instagram and you start posting videos and posting photographs, they cover the cost of hosting that data in order to keep you. They improve the customer experience to keep you. But that's because they're making money off your data.
Yeah.
Nostr doesn't do that. It flips the whole thing around. And suddenly it's more of a pay-to-play environment where it's like, well, first of all, you've got to do the work to get the feed that you want. Second of all, if you want to post anything that's like, you know, long-form video or photos, you've got to host it yourself. And it just really makes you think about how the internet actually works. And so I don't know what of that really resonates, Jordy, but it's really fun playing around with this thing.
Social media platforms have made our lives so easy. So now there is like this trend that that people call like the new generation, like Gen Zs, they call them digital natives, which for me, it's wrong. Because what these people with this new generation is they're just users of tools that make their life so easy that even a baby, now they say, oh, look, my baby, 1 year old baby already knows how to use the tablet. Yeah, because those tools are built for people without, that doesn't need to use the brain. It's just next, play, upload content. You just hit record. You don't even realize that you are recording and transmitting at the same time. So Noster, because it is so an ascent technology, is so in its infancy, there are many things to be built. Social media platforms have been around for 20, 30 years. So we have streamlined like the user experience. So now anybody can use it. With Noster, we're just following the steps. We are in the baby steps phase now, or maybe crawling, you know, it's like even before walking. So this will, by this I mean Noster. Noster will reach the same level of user experience if we use it. Because at the beginning, try to remember how it was to host a website. I remember in the 90s, I had my own website and I had to have a server and upload the files I FTP and try to edit all the files so they look compatible from one browser with the other. It is all part of the technological evolution or progress. You can call it progress. If there is more people interested in that, then, you know, like the typical chart, the technology adoption chart.
The S curve. Yeah.
You know, at the beginning, it's just the innovators that are tinkering around with the technology. And the same happened with Bitcoin. Bitcoin at the beginning was so complicated. You had to have like this wallet on the computer. And now we have much more usable Bitcoin wallets on the phone, but still a normie will never understand how to start in Bitcoin because we are not there yet. We are looking for the massive adoption. It's like after the innovators, you need the early adopters. You need to cross the chasm. And then when you go to the early majority, when you are in that phase, then there will be enough people in the market. People, by people, I mean participants. It can be companies, it can be organizations, it can be
governments, anyone. Yeah.
Anyone that wants to build to make it easier for this vast majority. So at the beginning, now you have to suffer or struggle with all these. You and any content creator needs to struggle. Because there is nobody that has found a way to monetize that, to offer it in a way so there is enough people that is willing to pay. But there will be one day that there will be integrations. When now you have to post on iTunes, Spotify, YouTube, blah, blah, blah. No, there will be one day that there will be like this company that tells you, just upload your video here and we'll make the rest. We'll create a server for you on Noster. We'll create an account for you on YouTube and it will be distributed everywhere. But this is based on market dynamics. So as long as we are a small community, then we will be in its infancy. So the only way, because of that, the only way to solve that is to bring more people to Noster. How do we bring them to Noster? Just by telling the benefits it has, like this characteristic that I said before that I like a lot. And I think that's interesting enough for your audience, for the type of people that we mingle with, that are the Bitcoiners, the freedom seekers, freedom technologists, nomads, digital nomads, frequent travelers, like this type of people that is looking for freedom. So it's part of of the path, and we'll only get there. We'll only get to this level of sophistication, like you are having with YouTube, for example, if enough people wants to join. And we cannot change people's minds. So it's like we have to show what are the differences and the market will choose.
You never know if you're going in the right direction. Like that's just life. But you can make educated bets about what's a better direction to go in. And I like this idea of like you skate where the puck is going. You know, you're already a couple of steps ahead of the wider market perhaps. And I still think anyone who's got a large allocation to Bitcoin is already like well ahead of the curve. But Nostra is just another tier on top of that. And for me, it's still that simple fact, like, hang on a second. So if I invest time and energy into building a Nostra profile, then it can't be taken from me. Well, that's surely a better idea than putting time and effort into a profile that can be. And so the long-term play is very obviously Nostra, but as we mentioned, we're so early. So I think some of the good data that I've looked at, there's like 30 to 50,000 active Nostra users daily. So like it's tiny, absolutely tiny. Instagram has 1.5 billion daily active users. The people use it for an hour a day, 1.5 billion. It's mental. We're miles off the pace by, you know, factors of magnitude. But what I think is so compelling is like it can't be taken from you. And you can go and behave, say, do what you want. Keep in mind that because there's no delete button, you are accountable to your word. What you say today will still be there in 10 years' time. Now, with a social media platform, the irony is you still said those things, but you can claim to hide them from them. But the social media company still has that data. And actually, if you're a person of interest, they might release that to a government who puts pressure on them anyway. That's another discussion entirely. When it comes to this whole idea of Nostra, I'd love to understand more about Setlantis specifically. I downloaded it recently through test flight on iOS and had to play around with it. I'm actually in Bali at the moment, and Canggu was just like rammed full of places that are listed on Setlantis. You're like, how cool is that? Now, I think when you first start playing around with Nostra, the idea that you have this public-private key pair is very Bitcoin-specific in that sense, or similar. That feels okay. But it's like when you start using, hang on, I'm going to use Damas, or now I'm going to use Primal, or now I'm going to log in with another one. It's like all these different clients. It's like, hang on a second. You don't have to have different accounts for Facebook and for Instagram and for, you know, YouTube and Twitter any longer. You can actually just have one that goes to them all. And that's a real light bulb moment. You're like, oh my God, this is going to be like a key for entry to the digital world, but a key that you control critically, right? And can't be taken from you. And so it's very, very good, in my opinion, from that concept of like of privacy, right? You selectively reveal to the world what you want. And I saw Abby Bura working on a health tech startup idea around Nostra key pairs. And like every time you go and see a health practitioner, you've got to go through your entire history of health. So, well, actually, what if you have your history of health with a Nostra key pair and you can selectively reveal to that person what you want them to see? Like, how much better would that be than some kind of government entity looking after your health records? Like, obviously, that would be cool. Isn't that cool, right? And so where am I going with all this? I guess it's this idea that when I opened Setlantis, I was like, fuck me, this is Google Maps as well. And now it's like you won't have to go from someone's Instagram post and be like, where is that? Okay, that's there. All right, well, when's that open? How do I get there? It'll all just do it straight through your Nostra client. And that's magic, right? Because I get so much information from Google reviews, but have they been gamed? Probably.
Of course.
And who the hell's like on Google? It's free to post anything. So you could probably have some guy sitting in a low-income economy with 50 blokes doing Google reviews for 50 bucks. Like you don't know, because again, back to your point at the start, cost with speech. So this, there must have been a moment for you as well then where you're like, oh my God, Setlantis is the Google Maps piece to this as well.
And it's more than Google Maps, as you're saying.
Okay.
You mentioned Instagram, like you go to Instagram, you see like a nice restaurant or whatever, and then you have to find the link, and maybe they have a link to their Google Maps, or maybe not, maybe they have a link to their Linktree, and then you open the Linktree and there are more buttons. Maybe you have a secondary Instagram account or the owner's account, an email button, and follow me on TikTok, and maybe there is a link to Google Maps, but you're lost. So what I'm trying to say is that everything that you built, all the reputation that you built on Instagram, now you have to copy paste it to Google Maps, but you cannot do it because they are different users or different bots, if you want to call it.
Different walled gardens is a phrase I like.
I like that as well. So the idea is that we on Setlantis, we're trying to give all the activities that we as frequent travelers are having in every trip, we're putting them all together on top of Nostra. So meaning that we didn't invent anything here. We just reach out on what are the tools that most travelers are using. And in this case, if you're in Canggu, and then what do you want to do there? Probably you're going to find accommodation, a place to eat, maybe some
gym. coffee, same right? shit. Yeah.
You want to meet other people, and there are apps to meet people. But the problem is that each app, it has its own private garden, as you were saying. So everything that happens in one cannot be related to the other one. But I wanna know if I want to trust you. So for example, one example of what Satlantis is very good at by connecting all these apps, an event. It's going to be like a big conference, right? Like now we're going to BTC Prague. All right. So in the event, there will be like 10,000 people at least. So how do I connect to these people? So I can get into the Telegram group. Maybe there's a Telegram group, or there is this other app that has everybody there. But if I want to meet this person in a site event, how do I do that? I have to find the site events page that has a link to maybe meetup.com or Eventbrite or Luma. Fuck, we're again in another platform. So maybe you have created a different account for that platform that is not tied to you. In Satlantis, what we do is like all site events are run in the same Prague page. I'm using Prague. If you're in Canggu, it doesn't matter. In any city, there are site events. Those site events, they are organized by the organizer. The organizer has an Oster account, so you can follow his past on what has he done. Maybe he has organized other events, and because there was other attendees that you know, or maybe there are comments on those events, you start building like this reputation on this person. Okay, you can do that on Oster. On Meetup as well. Right. So what's the difference? So this event organizer is organizing this event in this venue. This venue is also on Oster. So you cannot do that in Meetup. In Meetup, you need to, I'm using Meetup as one example. There are many other platforms. You have to link it to Google Maps. But then what happened in Google Maps is not connect to the event. It's just a link to an external app. So now this event organizer is connecting this event with this venue. This venue might be a restaurant. And then this restaurant might have other reviews from other people that are on Oster, because the restaurant is on Oster, the people that went, the clients are on Oster. So you can see like a connection between event organizer, event, place, comments, and all is under the same roof that is called Oster. So then you can see a real web of trust. And if you want to add more layers, you can use the social graph. At the beginning, as you say, we are at 20, 50,000 users a day. That's nothing. But the more users that come, the more personalized experience you'll see. So for example, next time I'm using this example of BTC Prague, but imagine you are in a more remote place with not such a big event. Then based on your social graph, meaning what do you like, who do you like, and what are the shared interests, we can show you events that align 100% with you. So when you go to a place, you don't have to do the discovery, but your history is helping you do your discovery. Mm. And if you change your mind and now it's like, no, I'm not that person anymore, or I want to have different experiences, it's fine. Create like a couple accounts with different interests. So then it's like, if you are in a sports team mode, you create your sports account. And if you are more in a discovery, in a traveler discovery mode, you create the discovery. And then you can follow cities, and then based on what's going on in that city. So it's like imagine like Google Maps, Eventbrite, Instagram, Twitter. Imagine if they all open their gardens and they created APIs with each other, so we could mingle people from here to there. At the beginning, it was like that on Twitter. That was amazing. The story, there is this book, No Filter, that tells the story of Instagram. At the beginning, Twitter had this API that connected with Instagram. So everything you posted on Twitter was reshared on Instagram. Until there was like some, and this is what I read in the book. I don't know the real truth, but I believe, I want to believe. So it's like, in the end, when Instagram grew so much, Twitter decided to shut down this API, because it was driving the users from Twitter to Instagram. So what at the beginning was following the interests of the open internet was just shared, hyperlinks. The internet was invented for that, so we can connect. But now they closed the doors and they created like these gardens that not allow us to go back to the origins of the internet. So I believe that Oster is like a back to the origin story, and I don't know if that's good or if that's bad. What drove us here is market dynamics. So maybe now what we're doing is going against market dynamics. But I believe that even though we say that there is a small number of people on Nostr, there is a number on Nostr. So the market is asking for that.
Hmm. And I believe strongly, so you mentioned your startup experience, which I haven't had time to dig into what it was you were building and growing. I did some angel investing in startups in 2017, 18, 19, and tried to found a number of things myself. So familiar with that space. And there's a saying I always love from it, which is traction trumps everything. So it doesn't matter how good your pitch deck is, doesn't matter how good your website looks, doesn't matter like who's supposedly in your team. None of it matters if you don't have any traction. And the 30 to 50,000 people that are using Nostr every day, the subset of that in terms of information that I find particularly interesting is there are people who have nuked 10 years worth of social media activity to now just be all Nostr. They have literally walked away from everything they knew on social media platforms and said, that's not me. I'm not doing anything more with those companies. And I'm investing everything I have into doing, you know, Nostr is my social media. They might just be doing it as an anonymous profile, shit posting about whatever, but it's still like that to me is like the ride or die type attitude that I will die on this hill. That's traction, like that's proper traction. That's what really excites me. Something like Satlantis is a business to really keep your eyes peeled on. Anyone out there that's listening, like try out the product. Obviously tune into these podcasts and listen to you guys building the thing. I wish you the very best of luck, Jordy. It sounds absolutely brilliant, mate. There's a ton more questions that I have. I'm in my mid now. Well, I'll be 37 soon. So is that mid to late 30s, I guess? Pattern recognition is something I really value. And some of the best podcast interviews I've ever done are with people that are like 20 to 30 years older than me, who are like, I was there at the start of the internet and Bitcoin's just like the start of the internet. But I've now been around Bitcoin long enough to then be like, well, I was there at the start of Nostr and it's just like Bitcoin. So that's a pattern recognition that's like, this thing's going to be valuable and I can make a large bet on the idea that an open protocol wins because people can build anything they want on top of it. And the network effect is so strong that it will ultimately eat everyone else for lunch. And that, I think, is essentially what you've described brilliantly over the last like 50 or so minutes. So Jordy, thank you so much for your time. If people want to reach out and get in touch, what's the best way to do that?
Yes, sure. Please find us in satlantis.io. I don't know, maybe you can see it written down there. This is our website. And then if you want to play with our app, which is a more personalized experience, just download Satlantis from the Google Play Store and iOS. So for iOS, as Jake is saying, so you have to download TestFlight because we are in beta. So, and if you want to just reach out to me, I'm available to reach out. You can see me in many conferences. I will be in BTC Prague, that's the next one, and BTC Hell in Helsinki. I will be in Prague again for the Freedom Conference. I'm trying to go to all these places so you guys can reach to me personally. And if you're not going there, just follow me on my Nostr handle, which is satlantis.io/Jordi.
Awesome. Well, Jordy, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, Jake. It's been a pleasure. Thank you for the invitation.